Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Scott Kirshner.
We're going to hear now the story of a man named John Willis.
He's a Boston gangster. Here he is describing the rules of the street as he learned them from a criminal mentor.
So he taught me the importance of having your brothers, to having your family, your people, the trust, the respect. No matter what you did, you would always, if some guy got arrested, you would make sure that you got him out of jail, even if he's all had to pull you money, whatever it was.
At first listen, John Willis sounds like he could be a gangster like Whitey Bulger. And in fact, like Whitey, Willis grew up in Dorchester.
But listen some more, and you'll hear why John Willis may be unique in Boston's criminal history.
He had a saying that he used to say to me was, Lasik ganjai mi, ngosik ganjai mi, lasik longha, ngosik longha.
John Willis speaks perfect Chinese.
Means like, you eat noodles, I'm going to eat noodles, but when I eat lobster, you're going to eat lobster. That's just the way it goes. It was kind of like a metaphor to say, you're going to do it with me. We're going to do it together.
Well, the white Dorchester native, he's in prison now. But in Chinatown, John Willis is known as the White Devil, a man who rose through the ranks of Boston's Chinatown gangs. And White Devil is the title of the new book by WCVB reporter and anchor Bob Halloran. And Bob Halloran joins us now in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
It's great to have you. Okay, so this John Willis' story, as I mentioned, I feel like it is fairly unique in Boston's storied criminal history. Give us a sense as to who he is. How did a young white man end up rising through the ranks in Boston's Chinatown gangs?
It was very interesting and very quick, as a matter of fact. He was orphaned through different circumstances. His father had left the family at a very early age, and his mom had died when he was 15 years old. So he was pretty much left alone. There was family in the area, but he kept to himself, started bodybuilding, weightlifting, getting strong, got himself a job as a bouncer at a Kenmore Square bar. And at some point, there was a fight at the bar, and he helped a guy out who happened to be Chinese. And that person gave him a card that said, if you ever have any trouble, give me a call.
Yeah.
John found himself in some trouble, called the number. That person, Wo Ping Zhou, showed up with about six or seven other Chinese guys, brought him to a house in Randolph. And pretty quickly, he was in the gang. And soon thereafter, he learned to speak Chinese and was an enforcer and a drug dealer. And it all started to develop pretty quickly.
So, Bob, you actually just now went over John Willis's story in much the same way that Willis did with you. There's a ton of detail in actually what you just talked about. I mean, let's dig into some of that detail. First of all, I mean, because it is sort of what catapulted him into Chinatown. And, you know, the story of losing his mother at a really young age is horrible. I mean, she had both her legs amputated.
Yes, she did. Yeah. And his cousin in particular told me that there was John Willis before his mom died and John Willis after. And I would say that there was a period of time when she was sick that the change started to occur. He was very angry.
He was 15.
He continues to be very angry about what happened and how he went from a kid who had things, you know, played in hockey leagues and had new shoes and, you know, he wasn't rich, but was doing well enough. And he had his brother who ultimately died of a heart attack as well. And so when the mom died, he was alone, and he was left alone to stew and get angrier and look for answers and a way out. And he believes that God showed him a way out, and it was through crime. And so he believes that despite his violent past and the harm that he's inflicted through the sale of drugs, that God loves him and he's going to heaven because he did the best that he could do with what he was given.
I mean, he was literally living by himself at the age of 15 or almost 16.
Yes.
Right?
There was his brother had lived upstairs in a triple decker. And when the brother died, his ex-wife was still living upstairs, but of no support. So he had two older sisters who lived outside the house on their own. They were married. And they also offered no support. So, like I say, there were opportunities for John to hook up with his cousin, Debbie Willis, and her family. He chose not to and sort of found himself in this new culture quickly enough that he didn't feel as lost.
But that's, I mean, how he found himself and the speed with which he found himself in the culture of the Chinatown gangs is kind of amazing, right? Because as you write in the book, you know, he had run out of money. He believes he couldn't have turned to other family, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It's the middle of winter. It's January. It's freezing. It's snowing outside. And he found the crumpled up business card of that Chinatown gangster whom he had inadvertently helped as a bouncer in a Kenmore Square club.
Yeah, I mean, in the fight, Wo Ping Zhou was losing, and I believe he had been maced. And so John brought him into the bathroom to help him out. All of a sudden, there were five or six other Chinese guys in the bathroom, not sure what John was doing, and they were threatening John because they thought he was going to hurt Wo Ping. And ultimately, Wo Ping said, no, he's cool, he's with me, don't worry about it. That started a connection that when John was destitute and desperate, he did walk several miles in the snow to a phone booth, because they still had phone booths back then, and made the phone call, not knowing who was going to answer on the other end of the line, because he didn't really know who Wo Ping Zhou was. It was just a very quick, fleeting moment, an introduction with the card. And when everybody showed up and brought him to the house, he goes to a house that has, he said, dozens of Chinese people, small children, older women, and gang members. There was new technology there, the VCRs and all the rest that was happening at that time. And the next day, after having dinner with them, the next day he was brought into Chinatown, where he was introduced to one of the lower-level gang leaders. And next thing you know, this white kid, and the Chinese were not, you know, fond of in letting people into their world. And somehow or another, John, I think because he showed them respect and they gave him respect back, then he was an excellent follower, and he also turned out to be an excellent leader. I think you can find through the pages that he's also a very intelligent person.
Yeah.
I don't know how you learn how to speak Chinese.
Well, so hang on there for a second, Bob. So, I mean, but 'cause tell me more about this. 'Cause, I mean, the way you write it, and I guess the way John Willis himself told you, 'cause you talked with him for, what, seven hours over a couple of days while he is in prison?
And I also had access to other interviews that had been transcribed, so a lot of John's brain in the book, what he thinks and says.
So it's remarkable that in the course of 24 hours, he is brought into a pretty insular community, right?
Yes.
In the Chinatown gangs. I mean, tell me more about what he told you about why he thinks that happened.
He thinks it's because of his age, because he was innocent in terms of he didn't have any kind of a record against the Chinese. There was no past. There was no prejudice. And because he had helped out Wo Ping, he believes that the Chinese culture really respects loyalty, and that you owe somebody a favor if they do something for you. So Wo Ping owed him. And so in an effort to settle the debt, he introduced John to the gang. And I think he also believes that at some point, and it must have been early, but it was also later, that, he was a conversation piece. It was kind of cool to have the white guy following around in the gang, especially when he did learn how to speak Chinese. And now he could actually move well within Chinatown, talk to the business owners, the merchants, the people that they were shaking down, anything that was required. And I think that's why he was sought after by the head of the gang, Bai Ming, that you'll read about as well.
Yeah. So we're speaking with Bob Halloran. By day, he's a reporter and anchor for WCVB. And he's also author of the new book called White Devil, about a Chinatown gangster named John Willis, who is not Chinese. He was born white. Well, he is white, and grew up in Dorchester. He's currently serving a 20-year prison sentence?
20 years. He's a couple of years into it.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a remarkable story of an unlikely ascension, I have to say. But let's talk a little bit about how it is that John Willis, I mean, you mentioned it just now, like it wasn't that just, you know, he was young and he was loyal, but to me, it showed a little bit of an intelligence that he was able to learn Chinese fluently at the age of 16, 17.
He can't write it because he did learn.
He can speak it, though.
He can speak it fluently. You've heard it here today on the tape, and I heard it on wiretaps as well, and they were transcribed as well for me. And other friends I have also heard him suddenly just break into Chinese, and it is quite remarkable. He did it by being with Chinese people on a regular basis, by learning a few words a day, going to karaoke bars, and part of it was that a friend of his had said, you know, if you're going to pick up girls, you're going to have to learn how to speak Chinese. And so he watched movies, listened to music. And like I say, I mean, I just feel like for him to have been able to pick up any amount of Chinese just by using flashcards and going to karaoke bars, let alone learn to end up speaking it fluently, does show a pretty significant sign of intelligence.
So we've got some tape here of John Willis himself talking about the fact that he was able to learn Chinese with such fluidity. And that was one of the reasons why he pointed to about his regarding his ability to be successful within Chinatown's criminal underworld. So here's John Willis himself.
I think he liked me because I was white, I was bigger. He felt it was almost a novelty to have a white guy who could speak Chinese and have someone, a guy who could speak broken Chinese. Like when I spoke Chinese with an accent. I spoke Chinese with a Chinese accent.
I also want to play a little bit more of John Willis himself here because there's this lingering question to me about he may have been brought into the Chinese underworld because he was useful and showed a proclivity for the cultural ways of the underworld. But I want to ask you about this in a second, Bob, but of how much he was actually accepted, really, by those Chinese gangsters themselves. But here is John Willis responding to a question about identity here.
In reality, yeah, I'm white, but look at the way we're raised as children. We know our family, but if it ain't family, we're supposed to, you know, do whatever is politically correct or right. When you develop a family in the street with all these people, these are the people that you have to be politically correct or right with. So you don't tell on them. You don't want them to lose their lives. You don't want them to lose their family. And that's the honor aspect of things. You have to take them like, you know, your Hingai, your brother. That's your brother. You might not be from the same mother and father, but hey.
That's John Willis there, known as the White Devil in Chinatown. Bob Halloran, how much was John Willis really accepted wholeheartedly into these Chinatown gangs?
I got the sense that it wasn't that difficult for him to associate with the gang members, the low-level kids and stuff, because it didn't take him long before. Now, he was answering to Bai Ming, but he was also leading out on the streets. And I do think it had a lot to do with his size, his willingness to do anything that it took. And I thought from talking with John that I don't know if he earned the respect of the merchants and the business owners and the gambling dens and the brothels that he was going to, but they knew not to mess with him quickly enough. And I think John calls that respect. Mm-hmm. It's fear, it's intimidation, but John considers that respect, whereas among his family of brothers in the Chinese gangs, I think that was kind of a mutual respect, genuinely.
Now, while reporting this story, writing the book, were you able to talk with people in Chinatown about John Willis?
Mostly, I talked with the FBI and family members. I went to visit Chinatown and talked to a few people and was denied. One guy in particular is the brother of a gangster, Ayut, who is throughout the book had many dealings with John and lots of different crimes. But Chinatown closed up on me.
Mm-hmm. Well, so we described that, we mentioned that John Willis is serving a 20-year sentence for drug dealing,
yeah,
right?
Selling OxyContin.
Yeah, he was arrested in March of 2011 on trafficking charges. But you write in the book that it was really important to him to keep his drug trafficking completely separate from the criminal activities he was participating in Chinatown.
That was a big part of what John has to say about Chinatown, is that the criminality, they tried not to let it into Chinatown. So they're not going to sell drugs in Chinatown. In fact, his boss gave him two pieces of advice. One was, don't get a girlfriend because it'll mess you up emotionally. And the other is, don't sell drugs. So when John decided that he could make more money selling drugs, he had to kind of branch out on his own. So he was still connected to Bai Ming and still doing things for him. In fact, it was a bootstrapped investigation from Chinatown with two other individuals that the FBI was looking at that kind of connected John to the whole thing. But when he was selling selling drugs, he did that outside of Chinatown, found himself first with marijuana, then cocaine, and then ultimately after a stint in jail and having met a couple of people, he found that the pill mills in Florida could provide an abundance of OxyContin. and you buy that for $4 at the different pill mills, and you sell it up Cape Cod and other places in Massachusetts for $15 to $20, yeah. And it didn't take long for him to make an awful lot of money.
So how much do you think of John Willis's own sense of self revolves around what I kind of viewed as a perverse take on Chinese culture, right? Because he's got, yeah. you mentioned that he's got tattoos on his arms of Chinese characters, right, mm-hmm. of strength and loyalty. And he, meditates while in a form of meditation
sure.
while in prison? But he seems to have absorbed what he believes is Chinese culture, but is actually Chinese gang culture.
That's exactly how I see it, truly, because I think there's so much about the Chinese culture that we all, as we understand it, respect. And we think, okay, this is all about respecting your elders and having honor and loyalty. And so when John is introduced to those words, it's within a gang culture. And those words fall real short. He thinks that because, you know, a gang member is arrested and you go bail him out, that you showed honor and loyalty to that person. And yet, ultimately, you even see in John himself that this is every man unto himself. When John left those people behind and started with another group, and he can maintain a loyalty to that group, and as far as not ratting on each other or something like that. But I don't think that he got a true sense of what the Chinese culture among honorable and law-abiding people, what that means versus what the Chinese gang culture thinks it means.
Yeah. So what are we to make of the story of John Willis overall then?
You know, a couple of people have read it and found him to be empathetic. And that's not how I meant to write him, so that's okay.
I mean, the guy is a violent criminal.
And I thought that was coming through clearly, but I think that the fact that I let him explain himself as much as I do might lend itself to where some people might feel sympathetic to his plight, especially how it started, the loss of the mother, the abandonment of the father, being alone and destitute. But I do argue with him in the pages and also in person. He thinks that there was one path for him to get out of his issues and his circumstance. And I'm like, you know, a lot of people would have gotten a GED at some point. A lot of people might have made a few dollars committing crimes and then decided that there was a better way to do this. A lot of people would have come out of jail rehabilitated. But each time you went into jail, you came out with, you know, more determination. And he says he's a leopard who can't change his spots. Mm. So, you know, the FBI used the word psychopath regarding John. And so I'm not a psychologist, don't know exactly how you're supposed to play that out. So when I'm with John and he cries in front of me because he's missing his wife, who, by the way, he is not married to, and his daughter, who, by the way, he's not adopted, but that's how he refers to this woman and the daughter, and he's crying about it, I'm thinking, but if you're a psychopath, you don't cry. You don't feel that remorse, the regret. You don't feel love the way the rest of us do. So are those real tears? I don't know the answer to that. But they seemed real at the time. So I don't know really everything. All the time I spent with them, and I put it on the pages so you can try to figure them out as well. But there's a lot going on inside him.
So final question, Bob, and I got to do some journalistic housekeeping here. You're a reporter. I'm a reporter. So I'm gonna check some facts here. Your manager is the same as John Willis's manager, the same person?
My manager is Matt Valentinus, and he was able to procure the life rights for John with Warner Brothers, who's had the rights to John's story for the past couple of years. Once the movie deal was established, Matt was able to find me a publisher as well to write the book.
Is there any conflict of interest here, you think?
I didn't think so.
Okay.
How do you see it?
Is John Willis going to make any money off this movie?
John Willis
be made?
Makes, John Willis gets no money because of his circumstance with the police, FBI, his crimes and stuff. So he's not getting anything.
Okay, good. I had to check that because I was like, you know.
Not getting anything
from
me.
You can never be too careful about these things.
Nothing from me.
Well, Bob Halloran is a sports reporter and anchor for WCVB in Boston, and he's author of the new book about gangster John Willis. It's called White Devil. Bob, thanks so much for coming
Thank
in today.
Thank you very much. It was great.
Well, stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Scott Kersner. This is Radio Boston.